When I was a kid, all the best crockery lived in a buffet. There were the bone china teacups and cake platter, the gravy boat, also the silver-plated fish knives and condiment set. My parents' wedding presents mainly, I think. And these things were their valued possessions. But, you know, who uses fish knives and condiment sets nowadays? And there's the rest of the house, a lifetime's accumulations. When the time comes, what do you do with it all? If you've ever had to pack up your parents' home, how did you handle it? What did you let go of? What did you keep? And how did you make those decisions? Also, did it make you think about what will happen to all your things? Be great to hear from you with your experiences and your advice. Send us a voicemail or an email to lifematters@abc.net.au or let us know on Facebook. Mary Harnan is all about helping people make decisions about possessions. She's a home sorting specialist. And Paul Harrison is a consumer psychologist and senior lecturer in marketing and consumer behaviour at Deakin University. Also here, Michael McKenzie. Hi to you all.
Hello.
Good morning.
Paul, I just want to start the conversation perhaps a little bit more generally because I suspect for the first time in history we're both living longer and acquiring more things. Is there a kind of tsunami of unwanted consumer goods heading our way?
Look, I think it's a natural human need to acquire things. It's a, you know, like for hundreds of years, people have acquired things to present their identity to others, to talk. I mean, we talk about it as peacocking, you know, that you show the kinds of things, you show your people, the people you want to aspire to be, and also the people, the groups that you belong to. You demonstrate who you are through the stuff you own. So there's no surprise. I think one of the things, the tsunami, is a combination of things. One of them is that we're in the kind of the first world countries, we're more affluent than we've ever been. Stuff is easier to make and stuff is easier to acquire. And I think the last thing is that it's not going to stop because economies are built on this whole idea of constant growth. And so we are constantly making things more efficiently. We're kind of building in to some degree in kind of contemporary times this idea of things not lasting as long.
Sort of planned obsolescence.
Planned obsolescence, exactly. And so what's happening is that people are acquiring things, the rubbish is building up, but also it kind of pushes up against, I guess, the previous generations of acquiring things for long-term ownership and also, you know, to pass on to other generations.
Well, Mary, what signals to me as much as anything that people are struggling and often overwhelmed with working out what to do with family possessions, with this accumulation of stuff, is that there's a call for people like you, you know, professional sorters. Mm. What led you to become one?
I sorted out my family home about 10 years ago, and it's very confronting when it's your own stuff. There's a lot of emotional connections to the things because they mean something to you. Packing up and saying goodbye to the family home when a family may have owned it for 40 years is very confronting because it's closing a stage in your life. A lot of families need help with that, making sure they protect family dynamics because it can be a very emotional time. And as siblings, we aren't always that sensitive. So, it's taking care of the family and not letting the stuff overtake the process because in the end it's only stuff.
Yeah. Well, if you've been tasked with sorting and packing the family home, your parents or perhaps your grandparents' possessions, how did you manage it? How did you decide what you were going to keep and what you could let go of? And I wonder if you've subsequently regretted anything you got rid of. I think I have. Or maybe you're now wondering if you should have kept what you did. You can let us know on Facebook. Paul, the other thing is that we tend to build bigger houses and more garages these days, and people also rent storage units, one purpose being so you can keep a lot more stuff. Anything wrong with that?
Look, I think we're kind of pushing up against two things, this idea of, you know, the if there's anything wrong with that. One of the reasons why people do find it difficult to give stuff away is because there's a kind of psychological underpinning, a psychological bias, which is that we actually value things more once we own them. So we actually put more value on this stuff once it's in our possession. And there's an interesting kind of, I guess, issue there with when we start acquiring other people's stuff, including our parents, which is, do we own it or don't we own it? And there's a kind of all sorts of stuff going on in our limbic system, our emotional brain, that says, well, is it mine or isn't it mine? But I think that's the we can see that's the reason why there's been such a growth in these storage units and garages and bigger houses, is that it's actually really difficult to give stuff away.
Well, also, if you can't decide, making that decision, of, as you say, is it mine or isn't it, the tendency, I guess, is to hang on to it just in case.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and these studies have been shown this whole idea that people, once they acquire something, they actually increase their perception of the value of that object in comparison to when it wasn't theirs.
Michael?
Well, look, I just on that very notion there, Chris has written on Facebook, the surprise was that the things that mattered most to Dad, which was the cheap cat trinkets and the school pottery disasters, meant least to us. We kept a box of bits and pieces, but mostly what mattered to him didn't find any takers, strangely enough, says Chris. And online with us is Josephine in Victoria. And Josephine, you're sort of taking the bull by the horns and downsizing yourself.
Yes, I just decided exactly what you're talking about, that why would I put that pressure on our children one day? We've been in our house for 30 years. We've had 6 acres. We all had horses. The horses are all gone. And we are doing the thing of downsizing. And I've had beautiful willow crockery that in the early years I used to use for dinner parties. But it's gold-rimmed. I couldn't use it in the dishwasher. So as time went by, my priorities changed. I wanted to be able to enjoy having people over and be able to end the night with things going in the dishwasher. So the willow crockery, beautiful sets of it that I had accumulated partly from my grandmother, partly what I'd bought over the years. And it had sat in a cupboard probably for, I would say, 25 years. Beautiful silver that was my mother's. I got in touch. I got the name of an antique dealer, and I sold all my mother's good crockery to him, all this willow crockery, and I polished up all the silver. And everything in the house, one of our... fairly emotional...
Oh, Josephine, it's so interesting because what you're saying is you decided that you would keep things on the basis of function over sentiment, and yet it still actually really affects you.
It does. It's a big thing, and it's wonderful. I'm very proud. Okay. I'm very proud to have done it.
Well done. Good on you, Josephine.
And Josephine, your children also will thank you for this. And look, I know it's hard because regret is part of this, but we'll talk about that soon. And thanks very much for calling.
My pleasure.
Thanks, Josephine. Mary, are you seeing a bit more of that, that people like Josephine are making those decisions themselves about that stuff and not leaving it to the next generation?
Some families, some people are doing that. One of the saddest things I see is all the beautiful stuff in a cupboard never seeing the light of day, and broken crockery and broken mugs being used in the kitchen. And I tell people all the time, get your beautiful stuff out and use it, because it may end up in an op shop.
Josephine mentioned that the crockery couldn't go in the dishwasher, which was obviously a bit of a criteria for her.
Yes. Yeah, that's interesting. But also it is the sort of psychology, Paul, of perhaps previous generations to us, to keep things for best. Mm. We tend not to, but it was a kind of thing you did.
Yeah, and I think what we've realised as time goes on is that there's a lot of functional need amongst the products that we buy, and we've kind of been trained to buy things that have utility rather than things that have kind of emotional connection. I think, you know, part of this new era of consumption is very much buy things that make you kind of feel good about yourself or satisfy you. And I think emotions are quite a deep kind of response. And so,
oh, well, we heard that with Josephine.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, the good crockery, as you were saying, the fish knives, the buffet. I mean, I have memories of that myself. And, yes, they only came out when, you know, on special occasion. I don't even know if they ever came out, really. But, again, that was a form of display as well. And now what we do is that we display through all sorts of other things, including, you know, how we might plate things up, which is, you know, the modern era. We do our peacocking in different ways. And that's, again, just a normal kind of function of generations changing and what we're exposed to in terms of knowledge.
Patricia, I'm so sorry to hear that your mum died in July. You're based in Mildura. Tell us how you've decided to allocate possessions from your mum to the family.
Thanks, Michael. My sisters and I, well, not my sisters, my siblings and I, the five of us, sat down after mum died and said to each other, is there anything that you particularly want? Which worked out really well. There's only a couple of things that people both all wanted, and we kind of made a little bit of a bargain between ourselves. Well, if you take that, I'll take that. But then, I must say, my mum was in her house for 62 years and was a bit of a hoarder as well. But her house was also a hub for all the grandchildren, especially at family celebrations. So they were all very attached to mum. And two of my sisters did a great thing. They put all the items out on tables and took photos of them, put them on our family Facebook page, which only the family sees, and says, who wants what? And the children have all been fantastic, their grandchildren, in saying, yes, I would like this, I would like this, I would like this. And there's been no arguments. Everybody has chosen some things. But the other thing we said to our children was, what is there anything that when you walk into Nana's house that you feel emotionally attached to or reminds you of Nana? And some of the items were amazing, the things that the grandchildren chose, things that I would never have chosen. They said, I always think of this, and I said, right, you can have those. And it's been really terrific because it's also allowed people to express their emotions as well. My daughter, for instance, said, I had my first cup of tea in Nana's house. I would like some of her nice teacups.
Beautiful.
And we all said, that's fantastic. That's exactly what my mum would want.
Thank you, Patricia. Mary, your response to that and to that method of putting stuff on the family Facebook page?
That is a great way to do it. And you'll be surprised what people in the family will want. They often don't want the expensive items. I had a phone call from a gentleman about a year ago who was packing up his family home after his mother had passed away, and he wanted to get a valuer in to value all the items. There was only him and his sister, and I said to him, so what do you want? And he said, I don't want anything. So I said, why don't you let her have it all? And he said, simple answer. He didn't need a valuer to come in. She wanted it all. Let her have it.
No.
So sometimes the answer can be really simple. And in my own case, I have my father's shovel that I love using in the garden. And every time I get out there and dig, I remember, you know, digging with Dad in the family garden. So there can be memories of things that are really important.
Well, just on that very note, Rosemary has written on Facebook, ultimately, you can't keep much. The things I've kept which belong to my mum are not numerous, but they're precious to me. I've kept beautiful objects like an old inlaid wood jewellery box, the first ever porcelain doll that she bought for herself, and odd things too. But she's been quite ruthless, she says, when it comes to throwing things out. And someone else wrote they had a little burning ceremony for things that obviously were flammable but they didn't want to keep. So it was like a ritual, you know, which was kind
of interesting.
Nice.
Well, Mary, how do you help a person who is struggling with, you know, feeling overwhelmed by this household of possessions, this lifetime of memories? How do you help them sort through what to do, what to keep, what to get rid of?
I tell all my clients that your loved one has left you maybe five treasures for you to take to your life. And if they're being really naughty, I say they can have seven or eight. but mainly five, because you don't want to overwhelm your own home with somebody else's stuff. And then we start from the top. What do family and friends want? What can be sold? What can be donated? And then the rest has to go to the tip in the sky.
Interesting you recommend a number, though, five, seven max. That really does kind of give you some parameters to work with. Paul?
One of the interesting things, too, with being human is storytelling and narratives. And I think one of the things that is really important in this process is for people to think about what stories the things that they want to acquire, the things that they want to take, tell them about their loved one. And I think the critical thing here is to actually take the time to think about those stories and to not necessarily to think it in a very economic kind of way, which is what's of most value or even, you know, the concept of value, but how does it make you feel? And also to think about, you know, different periods of your relationship with that person as well. I think one of the things that we talk a lot about in consumer behaviour is narratives, you know, that people look for narratives to help them to understand the world. And these narratives will have a historical context as well. And you'll be saying, this is, as you know, that first cup of tea I had at Nana's house. But then, you know, there might be something else that kind of connects you to another period of time when you were with your Nana or something like that.
James is in King Lake. And James, now, when your mother died, she was living in a rental property. So you had to pack up very quickly. Tell us about that.
She passed away of a stroke 2 years ago, and being in a rental property, she and of limited funds, we didn't have a huge amount of time to pack up. So we essentially had from a Friday afternoon to a Monday morning to make the decisions of what to keep and what to throw out, essentially.
And how did you do that?
We were quite fortunate enough that over the years we've had discussions with Mum about what we wanted, and the joke in the family was, well, I've got my Band-Aid on that and it's got my name on it, right, stuck behind the painting or whatever. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the things that we did decide to keep were things that were important to her. So woodwork projects of my grandfather, he handmade a wooden clock, and my Nan had lots of China dolls that she'd handmade, so they were important to her. And of course, we kept all the important documents and the photographs and things like that, and a few furniture items. But essentially, everything else we gave away to charity, or unfortunately, had to send off to the tip.
Yeah. Thanks, James. Now, Mary, is it useful to have conversations with your parents when they're still around about, you know, what they value, what they want you to have, what you would like of theirs?
It can be valuable, and it can be valuable for your parents to leave roadmaps of what's important. So I often work with clients and we will have a cupboard of the special items where they've left notes for the children. You know, the piece of tartan came from great-grandfather's kilt. Some little pebbles that you would throw out if you were clearing a house, but they had actually been the grandmother's. And that comes from the days when we didn't have much stuff.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, 30, 40, 60 years ago, people only had a minimum amounts of stuff. So some of that stuff is very precious, but if you don't tell anybody about it, they won't know.
Yes, if you don't know that history, it's what Paul's talking about with the narrative, if you don't know the story.
Well, someone who knows the story of both her mother and also her children is Louise. And Louise, tell us what you're up to at the moment.
My mother died 2 years ago, and I've done the thing with my mother's position. She'd been widowed for 20 years. But a few months ago, I received a fairly devastating diagnosis myself. I'm 70. And our children are in their late 30s. For us, the thing of narrative is extremely important.
Yes.
And so that's what I'm trying to do now, amongst lots of other things, with our children, is make sure that they have what they want.
But also, I take it, because, Louise, you're preparing for you not being around, you've been telling stories around these possessions to your children. Have you done that?
Yes, that's right. right. They both live interstate and they have their own families, so they visit regularly and we visit as often as we can. Just this last weekend, my older daughter was here without husband and child and we went through a suitcase full of photographs. And I realised that an awful lot of the things I know about the people in the photographs, my only brother doesn't know. So there's another thing to do.
Well, congratulations, can I say, just congratulations on making this decision now, because clearly, you know, things are only going to get harder as you progress, and congratulations. I think all power to you. Thank you, Louise.
Thanks, bye.
That raises, Louise talked about photographs, and what do you do with photographs and perhaps, well, photographs in particular where there's people, they're photographs of people you don't know anymore, Paul or Mary?
Oh, look, I mean, I think there's two things that come up. One of them is there are a lot of photographs now that we take that don't exist on
any kind of solid form. Yes, well, it's a whole different scenario. I'm thinking back to,
that's right, but
to
older photographs.
Hard copy photos.
Exactly. I mean, I think that's the other thing is that there's going to be a huge number of photographs. And again, I think the issue is about sitting down and try, while you've got the opportunity to talk about those stories, or at least bringing the family together, because often different members of the family will know different stories, have different ideas about what happened there, because parents or loved ones will have passed on those stories to maybe the eldest sibling or something like that, that the youngest didn't get. And I think that's important as well.
Mary, what do you recommend with photographs?
Well, you'll find you've got a lot of photographs of people who you don't remember, who you don't know. And I say to cull them and get your most important photos. You can have a family party where you get them all out on a table and you, after you picked out your main photos that you want to keep, get the family to choose the rest. And I tell clients to get rid of any unflattering photos. You don't need to pass them on.
Oh, I agree.
And you want to make sure that none of them end up being in your funeral video, talking about sad things, but you don't know what photos will get used.
Good call. That's a good call. Can I say too that when it comes to possessions, one of the things we haven't talked about is smell. And older possessions, often made of cardboard or wood, carry smells that modern day objects don't carry. And smell is much is part of memory and stories.
Very evocative of memory, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And on that very topic, Makita has said on Facebook, "My siblings and I lost our elderly father this year, 5 years after my mother. They went through the house together and in the end they sort of stripped and organised things into piles. She took some of his classical records and her mother's blues and jazz gospel albums. But this is this part of the story that I love. Before her father died, and the year before he died, her father sent her a package in the mail, and it was every love note, letter and drawing she'd ever made for him as a child.
Beautiful.
That is lovely, isn't
so,
it?
I mean, that is her most precious possession now, and that's before he died.
Yeah. Well, again, that's kind of thinking things through, I guess. Just looking at Facebook too, Michael, the thing you mentioned about someone having a burning ceremony, that was actually photographs of people that they didn't know anymore and couldn't actually bring themselves just to chuck them out, but had this little sort of ritualised ceremony, which is interesting, Mary, isn't it, to make something of it, a way of disposing of something,
yes,
but to honour what you're doing.
It is, and sometimes some of your parents' things are private and they should never be seen by anybody else. So there may be love letters or something in the family that should be honoured in that way, maybe burnt. And the other thing I would say to people is you have to recognise that we have lots of things in our lives that serve a purpose at that time. And once that's finished, once they've helped us in our lives, it's time for them to go.
Sarah is in the ACT. Sarah, you've got a particular story. Tell us.
Yes. Hi. Good morning, everyone. Look, my grandfather, who was born in 1900, was a rubber planter in Sumatra in the 1930s. And in those days, big game hunting was still an acceptable thing. So growing up at my grandparents' house, there was a crocodile skin, a tiger skin, an enormous python skin, and an elephant's foot
So much skin.
Yes. Well, the elephant's foot had been turned into an umbrella stand, and quite sort of bizarre and macabre in some ways, but also intriguing because the hairs on it are quite bristly and the toenails are just enormous anyway.
Wow. So what are you doing with it?
Well, when my mother died, as her only child, it was, you know, came to me, and I really puzzled about what to do with it because, you know, I didn't want it to go to landfill. That seemed like not honouring of the elephant that gave up its life. But I couldn't find anywhere like any theatrical companies or any gentlemen's clubs that, you know, wanted it. They all sort of went, ooh, no. And so I kept it for a while, but now my daughter has her own house and she absolutely loves it.
Okay. There you go. Paul?
Oh, look, I was just thinking, based on what the conversation has been so far, I think rituals are also important as well and forms of ceremony. So often, you know, bringing people together to talk about something through some kind of way, the burning ceremony, things like that, those rituals are useful, are a useful way to both get the cognitive processes going, thinking about what's important, but also kind of to connect in an emotional way.
And also about letting go, yes. I guess. Yeah.
Let's take some more calls on this. And Peter, you have started to help yourself let go. You've been sorting through thousands of slides recently, I believe.
Yes, I've got a mindset now that looks around the house. I'm 85 and I'll live a long time, lot longer yet, but I'm looking around the house and I constantly think, how can I reduce the job of my children when I die? So, for example, I've just been through thousands and thousands of slides and thrown most of them out. But I put the rest into piles which are relevant to individual children or grandchildren or great-grandchildren, and I'll digitise some of those at least anyway and pass them on to them. But my constant thought is, how can I reduce their tasks? Because I'm aware of the fact that when I die, they'll have an enormous task of this house full of memories and junk and things that were beautiful once and are no longer needed.
That's a great story. I've got to say, I feel the wrench with the slides. I love slides. I'm a hoarder. Can you pass them on to someone at least? I'm thinking of me, maybe. But anyway, I'll leave that with you, Peter. Good work. Very good work.
Let's hear from Trish now. Trish, what's the hardest thing you've had working out what to do with once you've with moving your mother out of the family home?
Yeah, they'd been there for over 50 years and Dad had passed away. And we had all the things that you've mentioned, crockery and sets of things in the special cupboard. But one of the hardest things was their record collection. Mm. They had an absolute passion for classical music and it was really like the centre of their marriage in a way. And they had all these LPs and quite a few of them had little notes written on them from one to the other with a loving message. And it was just really heartbreaking having to decide what to do because we as the children, most of those records we didn't really have an attachment to. So I kept some of them. But in the end, we just took the little gorgeous notes off quite a few of them and just kept those. But we had to give away the LPs. But even just the other day, my sisters and I were talking about it, were saying we still had some regrets about parting with those LPs because they were so special to them. But what do you do?
What do you do, Tricia? Oh, that's right. And here's the thing, of course, is what do you do with items if you don't want them to go to landfill and you think they're worthy of something other than being thrown in the rubbish? What do you do? Liz is in Sydney. What have you done with things, Liz? No, I beg your pardon. No, we'll go to Liz in just a moment. Let's go instead to Greg. Greg, you've actually had an issue with your sister going through photographs, haven't you?
Yes, Michael. We're just saying to your producer that one of my sisters got hold of a whole host of photographs, so prints, and she selectively went through what she wanted to keep and what she thought was appropriate for the rest of the family to keep. And she went through and destroyed a whole host of photographs that weren't including just her, but us as well as a family.
Oh, no.
And I think in terms of your guests, and what a fantastic subject to be having now as well, I think it raises some interesting questions about getting in very early and actually having those key conversations that your guests were talking about having with members, and particularly if there is estrangement from various members, mm-hmm. which unfortunately there is a degree of strain between myself and my sister about this, and yeah. I was furious that somebody had already got in there before. We actually collectively as a family, and we're a large family, we're six children, we didn't have a chance to have a look at that stuff. Yeah.
There's some lessons to be learned there for all of us when it comes to family harmony. I think so. Thanks for that, Greg.
And let's hear from Liz in Sydney. Liz, about what you've done.
Yeah, hi. My brothers and I cleared out our family home about 2 years ago, and my dad designed and built it in the early 60s, so they'd been there for 50 years. And so there's a lot of stuff. And some stuff we did all keep, you know, really special things of my mother's, ceramics and things like that. And we also did things like have family and friends come over and take things, which is a really lovely thing to do, because then you go to their house and you see those objects, and it's a lovely reminder. But what I found really problematic was, you know, not wanting to turn pretty useful crockery and stuff into landfill, is how to get rid of things. And donations to charities and stuff, you know, the Red Cross and so on are sort of overwhelmed by boxes of stuff, so they don't always take things. And we sort of went through, we had to go through quite a system of trying to find places. Like, my mother had a lot of wool, and we ended up donating that to some women who do cancer knitting at RPA. We had weird things like old fox furs and things like that from my aunts. And
so be strategic is what you're saying, well, there, Liz. You can donate.
And also creative. You have to be quite creative in thinking about what might go where. Look, we could talk about this all day, I think. And if you'd like to tell us more about your experiences sorting through your parents' stuff, post a comment on Facebook. Mary Harnan is a home sorting specialist who runs a business called All Sorters, and Paul Harrison is a consumer psychologist in the School of Business at Deakin University. Thanks to you both.
Pleasure.
Thank you.